stockpiling medical supplies and food in London. Britain is trying on its Brexit crash helmet in case the country leaves the EU next March without a deal. The UK government on Thursday addressing such an outcome in earnest. Brexit Minister Dominic Raab laying out the beginnings of a contingency plan. The government has published its first official advice for businesses and citizens regarding how to prepare for a no-deal Brexit.
Is gold looking up these days? So far this year, the precious metal has not benefited from geopolitical risk and a looming global trade war, events that would normally send investors running to gold as a safe haven. Investors have instead sought safety in the U.S. dollar and government debt. And despite rising gold demand from emerging markets like Turkey and China, global prices have remained subdued.
Google is planning a return to China, but the project is shrouded in secrecy and employees are demanding transparency. According to a report by the New York Times on Thursday, a petition calling for more oversight and accountability in the project racked up more than 1,000 signatures. Reuters reported this month the app is a bid to win approval from Beijing to provide a mobile search engine in China.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It is August the 27th, 5:10 in the morning. Another business day and another business week getting off. Hopefully we think to a good start this morning. At least that's the way the markets look for now. The weather is a little bit warm here in Chicago, but we'll get through the last full week of September, I believe this is, right? Before or August, before we hit September. Labor Day weekend, the big holiday weekend next week. But we have to get through this one first. On the program today, we've got a good show for you. A little bit later in the program, Michael Irwin will be here from CareerBuilder.com. Michael has some of the stories of resumes that employers get and these stories from employers that you probably won't hear anywhere else about their craziest, most outrageous resume mistakes. That's coming up at about 5:40 this morning. Jen Kamens is here this morning, the executive director and co-founder of Brave Initiatives. In our CEO Spotlight, we'll get to Jen in just a minute, but first on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening gains. A little bit later this morning on Wall Street, Dow futures are up 70 points, more than 0.25%. NASDAQ futures are up almost 0.5% at 30.50. S&P futures are up about 0.25%, up 6 points at 28.83. Around the globe this morning, markets in Asia generally have been higher as a dovish speech by the U.S. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell and all-time highs on Wall Street last week gave markets a breather from trade tensions. This morning in Asia, the Nikkei is up nearly 200 points. The Hang Seng up more than 590 points. That's more than 2%, by the way. The Shanghai up almost 2%. In Europe, markets are generally higher, with the FTSE, the DAX, and the CAC all more than 0.5%, 0.25% higher. And oil is trading at $68.46 a barrel, which is down about 29 cents. A couple of stories we're watching for you this morning. Faced with plunging U.S. orders, surgical glove maker Ren Jining is hunting for new markets amid Chinese government's calls for that country and companies in that country to reduce reliance on the United States. From medical products to smartphone chips to soybeans, Beijing is responding to President Trump's tariffs by pushing companies to trade more with other countries. But there are few substitutes for the United States in some markets, an export market and source of technology for industries, including telecom equipment makers that Chinese leaders are eager to develop. The first electric car from Nissan, an electric sedan, the first in a wave of dozens of planned lower-cost electric models, being developed by global brands, has rolled off the assembly line in China. It's called the Sylphy Zero Emission, started production at a factory at Nissan Motor Company in China. And President Trump, the Trump administration, says the United States is close to a big trade agreement with Mexico. He's citing improved ties between the two countries. We'll see if this happens. These talks have been going on for weeks now. But they say this could be the week that the U.S. and Mexico come to an agreement on NAFTA. Canada has been sitting on the sidelines for this. Front and center this morning, CEO Spotlight Jen Kamens is here, the executive director and co-founder of Brave Initiatives. Jen, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Oh, thank you.
So nice to have you here because we've heard so much stuff, good stuff, about what you're doing. Start by telling us, for listeners who are not familiar with Brave Initiatives, something about it.
So Brave Initiatives basically runs Brave Camps, and our goal at Brave Camps is really to empower young girls, specifically between the ages of 13 and 19, to teach them to be agents of change in their communities through coding and design thinking. So basically we do coding camps that set up girls to change potentially their mindset or their career track towards what they want to pursue.
You're the co-founder of the group. What were you thinking when you founded this? How did it come about? Talk to us a little bit about that process.
Yeah, so my co-founder and I, her name is Emily Harburg, and we started this about 3.5 years ago. And what we were really driven by was the tech field is starting to change the way that we interact with people and communities and society. If you think about it, when I was a child, you didn't get in a car with a stranger. Now we take Ubers everywhere.
Yeah.
And so that's a huge shift that we've seen in our culture, and technology did that. And so when we think about technology and how it changes our mindset, we think that we really need to start being mindful of the people that we're bringing to the table when we're building technology. And I was actually working in technology at Motorola. I was a recruiter and just was really struggling. Our company as a whole was really struggling to find a diverse pool of candidates, whether that meant race, ethnicity, financial backgrounds in general. It was a pretty homogenous group that was applying for the jobs. And so our fear in hiring only one type of person as we built out our teams was that the technology that was being built for one people group. And that could ultimately be damaging to other people groups. And so that was really empowering and encouraging to us as we thought about building our organization.
And let's dig into that a little bit further. And, you know, some people don't like talking about what those people groups are and why things are developed. Mm-hmm. But the truth of it is stuff is built for white people, white male people, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's how it works.
Yeah. Well, and I think primarily it's built for white male people because it's white male people
building it. Right.
And all we really do is we know how to build things that we think are beneficial to people, but we usually base that on our own experiences. And so we often tend to think that other people's experiences are heavily aligned with our own experiences when that's not always the case.
Mm-hmm. So when you open up the doors like that and when you try to find all different kinds of cultures and backgrounds and people, how does that change the technology?
Yeah, so when you do have groups of people coming to the table and helping brainstorm and design and interview other people and really is a part of that intricate process, I should say, it changes the way that the product turns out to be. And so we believe at Brave that those teams need to be diverse in whatever sense you can imagine that word would mean, but be diverse from the design stage all the way through development stage, all the way through the approval stage. And when if we have people at the table who are come from different backgrounds, come from different value systems, come from different upbringings around that table, we believe that that technology that they will build will be more inclusive to different types of social ranges, economic ranges, all those things involved.
Can you give us an example of something that's been developed that's done that, that maybe our listeners would maybe be interacting with every day that's been changed for the better in that regard?
So are you talking about a Brave Camp?
Or some technology or something that's, you know, like you mentioned that this has changed, like the outcome of the technology is different.
Yeah.
Give us an example of like a technology that would have happened to.
So I think one thing that we talk a lot about is Uber.
Uber, okay.
Right? And so Uber or Lyft, these companies changed the way that we interact with other people. So when I was growing up, you didn't get into a car with a stranger, and now we put our kids in cars and send them to school or activities or practice in those cars. And so one thing that I think they had to be very mindful of is different communities, and I think they're really trying to adjust this and work on this, because if you grow up in Silicon Valley where, you know, it's typically safer, you can get in a car, you can go somewhere, and the likeliness of something happening to you is probably pretty low, but then you're starting to expand into different communities. These companies really had to start talking to other people in other cities, in other locations, all around the world, really, to see what are the cultural differences behind putting someone in a car. And so they've added tracking devices. They've added background checks. They've added so many different things to try and adjust their technology platform to make sure that it is starting to adjust to different areas and people groups.
And Uber's a great example, because not only did it impact that specific technology, but at least here in Chicago and other big cities, it's forced other industries, like, for instance, the taxi industry, to start going into those neighborhoods that weren't served before because Uber had started doing that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So absolutely. That's a good change. Yeah.
So when you started the company, or when you started this Brave Initiatives, you realized that you had to get this off. What was the first challenge that you had to get past to get this up and running?
Money is always, I mean, I know that's such a cliche answer, but when you go out with something to prove, and we feel like our model is pretty unique and different from other coding camps out there, it's hard to go out to people who are donating and convince them that you are the right team for it and that you have something that's going to work, something that hasn't been tested yet. And so I would say that was probably our first struggle, and, you know, is constantly a struggle, because we are, our goal is to send every girl to our camps for free. And so we go out and we fundraise for financial support for every single student. And so we're constantly in this battle where we know that there's a lot of communities that are willing to pay for our programs that have approached us, but we are sticking to our mission and our vision and trying to get this program into the hands of girls who can't afford it, or just money is a obstacle for them to come to camp. And so we're constantly kind of spinning that ball right now of raising funds for girls to come who wouldn't be able to come otherwise.
Chicago is not Silicon Valley, but we have a pretty good tech industry, a tech community here. How have they responded to you?
Pretty well, actually. I think I have been surprised to see different tech companies, and then also individuals from tech companies, just really get behind our mission and our vision. So the Facebook office here in Chicago gave us 55 MacBook Airs, which was huge. Motorola has been giving us a grant every year for the past 3 years. We have a company, an investing firm, it's called HC Tech. They base their investments on technology algorithms, and they've given to us regularly and are one of our supports. Uptake on the north side, they are one of our partners, and they send volunteers all the time and host many of our events and do a lot of community organization stuff there. So there's been a lot of companies that have come around and supported us, and people who are constantly running workshops for us or showing up at camps or helping us run our fundraisers and all sorts of things. It's been wonderful.
Take us into one of the camps. What happens from beginning to end?
Yeah. So camp is actually a 5-day camp, and on the 6th day, the girls present. And so when girls come to camp, they mostly don't know anyone. Sometimes one or two girls will know each other. But for the most part, they don't know anyone. And so the first thing that we do is we really try to strike a chord in empathy development. And so the girls all come in and they share their stories. And so they get a poster, they draw out their stories, and they start to talk about the things that have held them back in their life and the things that have pushed them forward, and just really start to outline all the things that have made them who they are today. Mm-hmm. And then we go into the community path, where they start to identify what communities they identify themselves in and what are some issues that they see in those communities. And then from there, they pick an issue that they want to work on during the week. And so it could be gun violence, it could be teen pregnancy, it could be racism, it could be women's health, a whole range of different things that these girls really care about. And then the next day they come in, they interview people in the community. They essentially will talk to experts in the field of what the topic area that they're talking to, and people who have been impacted by the issue that they're working on. So they get a range of both. They do 15 to 20 minute phone interviews with 5 to 6 people. And then they have to go through this process, which is part of the design thinking process, to really start to think about not only our, like, what are the issues that we visibly see. So if you think about gun violence, you know, people are getting shot. People are fearful to go to school. People mm-hmm. are not getting jobs, all these things, right, because of this one problem. And it's easy to name those as the problem. But we take them through an activity to help them identify the roots of the issue, which could be lack of education in those areas, lack of funding for schools, all those types of things, and get them to start thinking about how do we build a piece of technology to actually bring relief to one of the roots of the issues. And so then the girls spend the rest of the week in coding, and they learn HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. to basically build an app or a website to bring relief to that issue. And then at the end of the week, the last day, they focus on their presentations and their presenting skills. And then they do a pitch day on Saturday.
That's a busy week.
It is a busy week.
But the beautiful thing about it is that, you know, I looked at some of the examples, and you can share maybe some of them with us.
Mm-hmm.
They come up with the technology that's just, it works.
Yeah.
And looks really nice.
Yeah, it does. They blow me away every time.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some of the projects specifically. Mm-hmm. You mentioned a couple of ones. I saw there's one on there that was, one of the past projects was trying to get people to, eat healthy.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was to direct people to the hospital. They could put in their symptoms or whatever, and it directed them to the nearest hospital.
Yeah.
Those are ingenious ideas.
Yeah, yeah. So one of our girls that you were just talking about, one of the groups just developed a website to really help people think about what are the health issues that they're going through. And I think a lot of people in low-income communities, when they have something really minor, they go to the ER, and they end up wasting a lot of money when they don't need to be. And so they basically created this survey that you would type in your symptoms, and then it would say, hey, you should go to this hospital, or you should go to this clinic at Walgreens, or here are some online resources to try and help divert people to where they're supposed to go.
And you said that at the end of the 6 days, they develop a piece of technology. Give us a sense of what that is. Is it always a website, or is it an app, or can it be a number of different things?
Yeah. So the first time girls come to camp, they build a website. And then the second time, so we do a returning camp every year, and that is an app. So it kind of changes as they grow through the program.
I'm sure you've seen a lot of faces come through.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you follow them after they leave the program, and give, are there success stories you can share?
Oh, I would love to. So we have one student, I won't share her name, but one student who actually came into our program. She was from the far north side of Chicago, and she was really, really interested in the environment because she saw a lot of environmental issues in her own neighborhood around pollution and stuff like that. And so when she came in, her mom made her come to camp. She wasn't excited, but was excited to work on this environment project and hear from all these experts. And so by the end of the week, she actually changed her mind that she was actually going to go to college, which was different than her plan when she came. And she was actually going to double major in environmentalism and coding. And so she just had this realization that she can still care about the environment, and she can increase her impact if she also has a coding degree and will be able to build things to help the environmental industry kind of grow their reach and impact.
So you're creating a lot of different doers,
mm-hmm.
people that are out there making a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Your experience at Motorola, when you were talking about looking for people,
mm-hmm.
To fill those positions, how is the challenge different to make sure that those people become leaders later down the road?
Yeah.
Why is that an important part of this?
Yeah. So one thing that we really emphasize at our programs is that girls actually step into leadership roles. And so our programs are actually run by our past campers. So we put them through leadership training, and then they actually run the programs the following summer if they sign up and go through the training and all that stuff. And so one reason we think that is so important is everybody's focus right now, specifically in the tech field, but also everywhere, is around creating a diverse work environment. But one thing that we're not focusing on is actually training our leaders to have a multicultural lens to be able to really work with all the people on their team. So when you're a leader, you are one race, you are one gender, you are one specific person. But what you need to be able to do is to be a good leader is be able to pull out the ideas from all the people on your team and make them feel empowered and encouraged in their work environment, like they are included and as if their ideas matter, right? And so one thing that we really focus on that our vision really covers is that we think it's so important that companies are embracing this idea, because there are studies that show that homogenous teams, let's say they're mildly successful. If you have a diverse team and it's led by poor leadership, it's actually more likely to fail or do way worse in its development stages. But if you have a diverse team and you have a leader who's actually capable of leading a diverse team and trained to lead a diverse team, your success is actually projected to be like tenfold of that homogenous team.
Yeah.
So
And that's an important thing. I mean, if you're only focused on dollar signs, that is enough argument right there to do this, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
And as you were talking, responding to that question, I was thinking how nice it would be to see this kind of grow like wildfire through different technologies. Because yeah. there's a lot of white male companies, especially tech companies. Wouldn't it be nice to see more of this in some of those companies?
Absolutely. Our vision is to see technology always be mindfully developed with a purpose in mind. We see that there are so many problems in our world right now. Mm-hmm. And the unfortunate thing is we have some of the sharpest minds trying to figure out how to click an ad on Facebook. We have some of the sharpest minds developing the next food delivery app, you know, things that we already have in place or are unnecessary. And so that's really our goal, is that we start pushing the next generation of technologists to be able to build mindfully from the design process all the way through the coding process and the leadership process.
Does it add to your optimism about that, to see that the schools now are focusing a lot on coding, that we're seeing more kids in early grades starting to do this, and also more focus on women and other diverse cultures that you're talking about?
Absolutely.
Whether it's STEM education or any of these things we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of people think that we have, you know, all these competitors with, you know, different organizations that are doing similar work, or schools that are now including it in their curriculum. And, you know, we're on the same team. You know, my goal is that if our organization doesn't need to exist anymore, then I've done my job. Mm-hmm. You know, whether that comes through Brave or comes through anything else, you know, I believe in our vision and our mission so strongly that it doesn't have to be me the one who actually solves the problem. I just want it to be done. And so we're all in this together. We're all fighting for the same cause. And we're all just getting after it because it matters.
Right. Aside from the challenges, you talked about money and the day-to-day operations of it. Mm-hmm. Now, have you thought about where you might like to take Brave initiatives, like say maybe 2 or 5, 10 years down the road?
Yeah. So this year we actually ran programs in Detroit, San Francisco, and Indianapolis. We also have a program coming up on a Native American reservation in New Mexico this year. Right. And then we actually have these conversations. It's been a crazy journey, but we have some conversations going on in Taipei, Taiwan, in Nairobi, Kenya, and then in Jakarta, Indonesia. And so those are actually our next 3 stops internationally. We've run a couple programs in Kingston, Jamaica, and so it's been cool to kind of see the diversity lens on our scope change mm-hmm. as we work with different cultures and different girls all over the world. But, you know, we're going for it. People are willing to support us financially in those places and are giving us the materials or the people on the ground. And so if that's where we need to go, that's where we need to go.
If you have some CEOs, business types out there listening this morning, you have a one-to-one message to them about this?
Yeah. So, you know, if you know people, if you know funding opportunities, if you know communities, maybe it's a community that you live in right now. Maybe it's a community that you grew up in that you're passionate about. This type of change going to your community so that people can have these opportunities. Reach out. We would love to hear from you. We'd love to hear from places that you're passionate about and care about, because that's what it takes. We can't go into places and change things on our own. It starts with someone who knows people on the ground. It starts with someone who's invested in that community. And we want to be their support. We want to come behind them and give them what they need to do this. But we can't go out and change the world on our own. We need to really team up with people. So if we have, you know, leaders anywhere in this world that are interested in doing this, we're willing to do what it takes to get behind them and equip them to bring change to their own communities.
Jen, it's great meeting you. All the best to everybody at Brave Initiatives. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Jen Kamens is Executive Director and Co-Founder at Brave Initiatives. You can find more about them online at braveinitiatives.com. And we will continue our conversation with Jen after the bell this morning. We'll post more of our conversation in the podcast of the opening bell at WGNradio.com. This is the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Hi, this is Catherine Davis with today's NO Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoNO.com. Chicago Startup Percent Pledge has secured $75,000 and is in the process of closing another $150,000 in additional funding from a group of undisclosed angel investors, totaling $225,000 in funding. The startup, which makes it easy for companies to donate to charitable causes, is using the funds to expand. University of Illinois professor William H. Sanders, who led the school's Department of Electrical and Computer Engineering, has been named the leader of the school's downtown Chicago Innovation Center. Sanders will lead the Discovery Partners Institute, the university's public-private innovation center in the South Loop. That's today's NO Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoNO.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us in our Monday edition of The Opening Bell. Employers are sharing some of the most outrageous mistakes they've seen on resumes, including some instant deal breakers. And they're also sharing some of the things you might do to improve your chances of getting hired at this very tough time, at least tight market for jobs. You have to sort of cut through the noise there and get into the employer. Michael Irwin is with us today. He's a senior career advisor at Career Builder. Michael, good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell.
Thanks for having me.
This is a great story to get Monday off, especially if people are out there getting ready to maybe start looking for another job or a new job. Some of these stories about these resumes, Michael, are unbelievable. First of all, tell us about what you've done here and what the survey encompasses.
Well, every year we look at resumes and resume mistakes, and the list never shocks us. It gets crazier and crazier each year. You know, we're in a time right now when job seekers are really in control. They're in the driver's seat. Employers can't find qualified candidates because the unemployment rate is so low. So it's really, they're paying more money, they're offering more benefits, and unfortunately, job seekers are hurting their chances on that initial resume when they should be able to get right in and hopefully get that job.
Does an employer look more closely at a resume during this kind of time period when we see the market as tight as it is, or are they so desperate for employers that somebody with some of these mistakes on the resumes might actually slip through?
Well, it's interesting that they tell us that there are instant deal breakers, but you're just not dealing with human resources professionals now. You're also dealing with technology. And when technology scans your resume initially, if they find some of these mistakes, such as typos, you go to the bottom of the pile. So you're really dealing against technology right now. And employers, are they going to overlook a lot of things in this environment? Maybe a couple of things, but I really think that HR tells us that they are really annoyed when there's no cover letter, when there's grammar mistakes, when you're not using quantifiable results. So I think that there are things that are deal breakers, and they're going to wait and hopefully find somebody better with all of the qualifications.
How long do some of these HR managers spend looking at resumes? I mean, we've always heard that you could, you know, that's the first couple of seconds. If it doesn't appeal to them, it's out, right? Is that still the case?
Yeah, definitely. 23% say that they spend less than 30 seconds. 39% spend less than a minute. So they're really just scanning in the beginning. And if something catches their eye, they're going to keep reading. So you really need to make sure that you're standing out for the right reasons and not the wrong reasons.
Michael, the survey also looks at, I know we talked about mistakes like grammar mistakes, but some of these examples are outright lies. How serious is that? How many people are actually lying on their resumes?
Well, 75% of employers say that they have caught a lie on their resume.
Wow.
And then many go on to tell us that some of those resumes aren't believable at all. So that's really a problem. And, you know, there's a lot of pressure to stand out. There's a lot of pressure to maybe embellish a little bit. But it's when it goes too far and you start to raise those red flags that you're going to miss out on a great opportunity. So my advice is always to make sure that it's as truthful as can be on your resume.
Give us some examples of some of the most outrageous resumes people have seen.
Well, this year my favorites are an applicant listed 40 jobs in 1 year. Job hopping is okay these days, but not when you have 40 in 1 year. Another listed their extensive arrest record. And, yeah, there's transparency, but this is just, but probably putting up red flags and not allowing you to get to the next level. A 22-year-old applicant claimed that they had three different degrees. And one of my favorites is an applicant referenced having as many marriages as jobs. So, when I read a lot of these, and these are from hiring managers who have seen these, and I wonder, you know, do they just not know? Do they think that they're being funny? Are they trying to stand out? I think it's a little bit of everything, and unfortunately they're standing out for the wrong reasons.
One of my favorites, and a couple of my favorites actually in the list that you guys sent over, an applicant, I guess, was on trying to get a job as a physician, a doctor, and he was referencing his experience as a grocery store shelf stocker and trying to get that job.
Yeah, you know, we constantly hear that there's a skills gap and that you could take some of your skills and apply them to a new position. This one's a huge stretch. So just really look in an area that your skills probably do apply and don't go overboard.
And then on the flip side of that, one of the others was an applicant's resume had only one sentence. It was only one sentence long.
If you can sum it up and do it in one sentence, maybe that's the way to go. But unfortunately, this hiring manager didn't bring them on for an interview, so it didn't work for them.
So give us some ideas about how we can do better here. I know people have always said the one-page resume and cover letter is always the best. Is that still the case?
It is the case, but as you move further into your career, you're going to have a little bit of a longer resume. Two pages is acceptable. One page is really what they're looking for. But when you get past that, you're probably putting too much information in, and you need to go through and cut a lot of that. You could explain more of your experience when you get in for the interview. So don't hurt yourself by having too long of a resume because you won't get to the next level.
And what about mistakes? Is it okay to have somebody else maybe look over the resume to catch some of these grammatical mistakes? How do people, double check and triple check their resumes? Maybe a fresh eye would help?
Yes, 77% of employers say that an instant deal breaker is those typos or bad grammar. And with spell check these days, you know, one of the common things we see is manager comes up as manger. So if you've looked at your resume 20 times, you're not going to see those mistakes. So it's vitally important that you have somebody else just take a look at it because they will spot things that maybe spell check and you don't see because you've read it too many times.
Another thing, you mentioned this earlier, that there are some, you know, these programs that are scanning resumes. On the flip side of the mistake part of this is are there some key words that people should know that maybe they should include in their resume to perhaps get in past those computer programs?
Yeah, definitely. One of the things, 18% of employers say that if a resume is generic, that's an instant deal breaker. And you hit it on the head. You need to read the job description and make sure some of the wording from the job description is in your resume. So when an automatic tracking system, that's what's going to come through and read your resume first, takes a look at your resume and sees some of the same keywords, it's going to move you to the top of the pile. The one thing that you should not do, though, is just cut and paste large parts of that job description into your resume because hiring managers have seen that before, and you will go to the bottom of the pile.
Michael, where can potential employees go to find more help in doing the resumes?
Well, at CareerBuilder.com, we have a resource section, and there's a lot of great information on writing resumes and making sure you have quantifiable results because it's hard. A lot of people say that this is one of the hardest things they have to do is sit down and put their work history into their resume. My advice is, even if you love your job, be constantly updating your resume because if you ever did lose your job, it's hard to go back and remember everything that you did and put those quantifiable results in there. So constantly be updating it. Search on the web. There's a lot of great resources out there. One of the things that employers say, though, is they do not like long paragraphs of text. That's really old school resume. So make sure you're bulleting it out and keeping in mind that they only have a few seconds to scan your resume. So grab their attention and make them want to bring you in for that interview.
Michael, always good information. Thanks for being with us this morning.
Thanks. Have a great day.
All right, you too. Michael Irwin at CareerBuilder. He's a senior career advisor there. You can find more tips and more information at CareerBuilder.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening gains later this morning on Wall Street. Dow futures are up 78 points right now. NASDAQ futures are up about 30 points. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. A lot going on this week in the world of agriculture. Not that it isn't happening every week, but tomorrow, opening day of the Farm Progress Show in Boone, Iowa this year. It's a three-day event, the granddaddy of all the outdoor farm shows in the country. It'll be Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and Max Armstrong and I will be on stage in the hospitality tent all 3 days. But then later in the week, there'll be a lot of farmers in shops and restaurants and stores in Chicago. The GrowMark annual meeting gets underway on Thursday at the Hilton Hotel in Chicago, an annual event. Their annual meeting and their agribusiness symposium will be held on the 29th and the 30th. And also, NAFTA talks are continuing, but the latest that came in yesterday, late in the day, the economy minister of Mexico said that he could not yet declare victory in bilateral talks with the United States over the North American Free Trade Agreement. Earlier in the day yesterday, he said they were just hours away from making an announcement, but that didn't happen. Governor Bruce Rauner signed the Industrial Hemp Act Senate bill, adding Illinois to a growing number of states that permit growth of cannabis cultivated for non-drug uses such as paper and fabric making, biodegradable plastics, construction materials, and health food. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Monday, August 27th. We'll get the Chicago Fed National Activity Index and the Dallas Fed Manufacturing Survey, among economic reports due out today. It's going to be a busy week, too. Tomorrow, the Case-Shiller Home Price Index, an update on consumer confidence. On Wednesday, the GDP numbers are out, jobless claims and personal income and outlays on Thursday. And then consumer sentiment and the Chicago PMI coming on Friday. So busy week there. iHeartMedia among companies reporting quarterly earnings today. Tomorrow, Best Buy, H&R Block, Tiffany. Also this week, Salesforce, Abercrombie & Fitch, Campbell Soup, Dollar Tree. All of that coming this week. So a very busy week on the markets and for reports of economic activity.